Tech Talk with Lee Stark.
Good morning, Lee. How are you?
I'm okay, mate. Yourself?
Not too bad, thanks, mate. Have your insurance costs gone up, Lee?
Yeah, but I think that's pretty. I think it's endemic across the industry. I don't think you can blame a political party for that. I'd say that's the economy.
Yeah, but who do you blame then if the economy's not travelling too well?
In this case, you can blame certain instances like wars overseas, COVID, and the fact that when mortgage is a good example of that, when the mortgage was dropped, it was because several years ago we had COVID, and they used that to stimulate the economy.
Yeah, I suppose we're still paying for that, aren't we? We really are, in reference to COVID. Let's talk tech. Got a couple of questions, mate. Sam says, what is the difference between NBN and 5G? Which is better? Why is my NBN, there's a whole series of questions here, so what's the difference between NBN and 5G, what is better? Why is my NBN listed as FTTN, but a friend of mine says theirs is FTTP? What does that mean?
All right, so a lot of questions there. So NBN is a wired network, effectively. So basically just the major national broadband network. Basically every home gets access to a massive internet connection, effectively. And it comes through certain different ways. So FTTP means the fiber directly comes, the connection directly comes to your house. That's fiber to the premises. FTTN means it goes to a little node, fiber to the node. It goes to basically a box on your street, and the remaining bit of distance is traveled by copper lines, the old copper lines of the Telstra network. That was one of the changes from going, I guess, from Labor to a Liberal government when the NBN was being rolled out. Originally, it was supposed to be everyone gets fiber to the premises, which is faster, and then Liberal changed it to fiber to the node, which was technically slightly less expensive at the time, but grew in price because they have to maintain the copper lines. And then there's also some people have HFC, which is a hybrid fiber coax, which is a technical way of saying cable lines. If you've ever had the cable lines in your street because you might have subscribed to Foxtel or something similar, you may be using HFC for your NBN. All of these are just connections to the wired internet. That's all it is. So depending on where you are, the reason why everyone has slightly different ones is based off how their street has been set up, how the actual rollout affected them. The first people to get the NBN, the initial burst of people when Labor was in power, primarily got fiber to the premises. It was faster, more reliable. That was what was promised. When it switched over to a Liberal government, it largely became fiber to the node. So depending on when your NBN was rolled out, if you have FTTN, it means that that's what you got at that time. And for people who didn't really have a node in the area but had a lot of cable lines, cable was faster, they might have HFC. So a good example is I've got HFC in my area, and where I used to live had HFC, but I've got friends on a couple streets away who have fiber to the node. And if you want to pay more to NBN Co., you can upgrade that to fiber to the premises, which can be faster. Again, it effectively works as FTTP and HFC are the fastest connections. FTTN isn't necessarily as fast, but it can get fast speeds. That's
Can you see people in time to come not bothering with an NBN connection? They'll just use 5G. And I'm talking about people in the cities, in the big cities, because you wouldn't be able to do it in country towns. Hell, country towns probably don't get a reasonable 4G service, let alone 5G.
So we'll see 5G improve in leaps and bounds gradually, and the expectation is it will probably take a few years. Till 2028 is largely when we're expecting rural to start getting 5G. But to answer your question, in cities, possibly. The problem with 5G is that the connection isn't ever specifically sustained. So with NBN and connections like it, you subscribe to 50 or 100. You're choosing the speed that you want, and you will predominantly get that except for peak times where it might be. So if you subscribe to a 250 megabit connection, your connection will pretty much sit between 200 and 250 all the time. If you do 5G is fast, yes, but it's dependent on how crowded the network is, what your reach is like to the antenna, what the weather is like. So you could hit speeds as fast as 1,000 megabit or 1.2 to 2 gigabit, but depending on how many other people around you are accessing it, it can also change the speed dramatically. The best best way of explaining how that works is if you go to a sporting event, or you go to an entertainment thing in a big arena, and you try to upload to the internet from your phone, you know that there's almost never a connection until everyone goes to the bathroom, you know, in the middle of it all. That's kind of the same thing. As mobile gets overcrowded, it affects everyone's speed and kind of limits what you're doing. So while your cities might adopt 5G for sort of home connections, NBN is more of a, or what fixed internet rather, is more of a constant speed that doesn't change. It's technically better and more reliable, even if 5G is faster.
Harold says, how can I fix my smart TV when it freezes or won't load apps properly?
Well, open-ended question. Depends on what your smart TV is running as an operating system. It sounds ridiculous. The most you can do is force crash an app, which is difficult to do if you have no control. So if it's directly on a TV itself, if you're using WebOS on an LG or Tizen on a Samsung or something like that, or you're using one of the smaller brands, a good example is Audi, for instance, uses WebOS on some of its TVs. The most you can do, weirdly, I know this sounds like a cliched thing, is turn it off and turn it on again, largely because WebOS or operating systems on a smart TV are built in. They offer very little control if something goes wrong. The most you can do is turn it off and turn it on again, which basically resets the memory and forces it back to the way it was before. If it happens a lot, the two things you can do are look for updates. Sometimes manufacturers will release an over-the-air or an OTA update that you can find in the settings screen of your TV. Every TV supports it, provided there's Wi-Fi access. They may not have an update available, or upgrade to a different smart TV device, something like a Google TV or an Apple TV. I'm not going to suggest a Hubble because it was never great in my experience, but something like that, maybe an Amazon TV Fire Stick. If you move to something like that, at least in that instance, you're taking the, I guess, the predicament away from your TV and making it based on a device that is solely made to be a smart TV.
I've got a question to ask you. A bloke called Brent. Why? And I'm watching a particular series on binge at the moment, right, on my Samsung smart TV, and I refuse to pay the top dollar, so I'm getting all these ads as part of my low-priced binge subscription because I'm a bit of a tighty. Why, if there is a break when there's four ads, why does it continually get to the fourth ad and it just stops? It just keeps repeating. It'll go 15 seconds, stop. Go back 3 seconds, stop. Go back 3 seconds, stop. And it just goes on and on and on. And I have reloaded or reinstalled the binge app on the TV and it still does it. Is this binge doing this to me so I get fed up with these apps and pay more for my subscription where I don't see these apps?
I don't think it's binge doing it intentionally, but we've seen Stream Motion. So Stream Motion is the company that makes all the apps for Binge and Foxtel and all that. And we've seen largely Stream Motion's apps aren't always the best in general. Not just in, from my experience as a reviewer, I can certainly say that they're unreliable. Hubble was a similar predicament. Hubble was crashing all the time. That's one of the reasons why reviewers weren't huge fans, myself included. So I would say it's less that they're trying to sell you onto a better service. The ads do that by itself, but more than just the app's not amazing. Ever since Binge came out, we've kind of been complaining that there are problems with it. It works at the best of times, and typically when there were no ads, it was more reliable. But yeah, I've seen the same thing. I'm like you, actually. I don't pay for the premium Binge or the premium Netflix anymore. Even Amazon's much the same, largely because I don't feel the need to pay more to get the same service. There are very few reasons to, I guess, to opt for the high-end one unless you want to get the latest in quality. And when I say latest in quality, I'm talking 4K and Dolby Atmos audio. I do that for the services I care about, like Disney, which has Star Wars and Marvel stuff on it. I don't do it for all the services. But I don't think it's a problem with you. I don't think it's them trying to upsell. I think it's just bugs in the app, if I'm honest.
Okay, last question before we talk some of the topics. Who sent this? Dean. Dean says, why is my phone battery draining so fast, even when I'm not using it much?
All right. Okay. So there's any number of things. Could be old. The first instance that we look to when we say a phone battery is dying is that it's old. It just doesn't hold charge, as opposed to it not being used. It's just not holding charge very well. Another option is that you're using things like GPS. It could be that you've got a lot of consistent 5G connection. Predominantly, it comes back to old. Newer devices, by the way, tend to handle themselves quite well when it comes to balancing mobile connections, screen time, and battery life. We're still typically seeing around 5 hours max for most devices for screen time, but we'll do a proper rundown test and get usually 24 hours minimum for most phones that go through review desks at the moment, which is fine. It's typically an age thing. It's less that your phone is doing something and more just the battery is not holding charge. Depending on when your phone was made, it will typically drop to about 90% battery after the first year. It might drop to 85 to 80 in the second year, and it gets progressively worse over time. Your key to buying, for instance, an old phone, if you're looking at refurbs, is to look at the screen quality, but also look at the battery. Replacing that battery is fundamentally important, because a battery needs to be able to hold charge rather than just storing at 100% and thinking you're getting the full 100%.
Okay, iPhone owners are about to talk to Android owners in much the same way. This is in reference to sending text messages. Is that right? Tell us more about this.
So we spoke about RCS last week, actually. I remember because you were one of the ones that brought it up, and you were actually kind of fitting. You're perfectly timed. There's now been a test to show that the iPhone connections, the symbols, I guess, the emojis that you send through an iPhone, the exclamation marks, things like that, now work technically in America with Android devices. That's official. Australia still won't see support until likely next year, because RCS is a technical thing that has to roll out to the telcos before it actually rolls out on devices. It's on all new devices. If you've got an Android phone, you support RCS. And if you've got a recent iPhone that supports iOS 18, which is pretty much any phone from the iPhone XR onwards, you support it as well. But basically, we just need the telco support it. So sometime early next year, it seems like iPhone and Android users will be able to communicate, not just with text properly, but they won't necessarily have the blue and green mistaken text message bubbles. They'll actually be able to send things to each other, and they'll be able to read them properly.
Will you still know that you are sending a message to an Android phone if you're an iPhone user?
Yeah, I think you will. I think what will happen is it will actually communicate that you're using RCS as opposed to iMessage. So iMessage sends out using the Apple colors, whereas RCS will still likely use the other one. It just depends on what it's sending out on. Look, we've not seen it work in Australia, and we've not really seen the full rollout properly in America yet. I suspect there'll be a setting. Over time, I also suspect iMessage will gradually start to fade away, because RCS is a technically more reliable standard, and honestly, Apple prefers standards at the best of times.
A laptop with a 3D screen. You say it's a thing, but it's very expensive.
It's incredibly expensive. It's about $7,600. It's sort of like that gadget from the future. You know the gadget, you're like, what do I buy for someone who has everything, but I have no idea what to get them, and I don't know any people who do that and have a ton of money at the same time. Clearly, my friends aren't amazingly loaded. That's the fun part of being a journalist, I guess. This is a really weird concept. It's kind of like what the future would probably be if everything was about entertainment. It's called the Helios 3D. It's made by a company called Acer, who's been making laptops for ages. It's a very experimental concept. If you can imagine a massive laptop that weighs close to about 3 kilos and has a battery supply, a power supply that's almost as heavy, it includes a special screen that uses a camera to track your eyes and basically convince you that you're looking at things in 3D. So it overlays two images at the same time, kind of like the old lenticular images you might have been able to get in like sort of promotional material. You stand in front of a poster and they change image as you look at them. This works in much the same way. But because the camera's tracking your eye, it tricks your brain into thinking that you're looking at something that is 3D. It's really interesting. It's very difficult to recommend, because it's $7,600 and weighing 3-ish kilos. It's not the sort of thing you would ever take with you, or you would ever go out and buy of your own volition. But it's a cool taste of what could happen in the future, even if it's really far ahead.
I've been watching a medical series on telly at the moment, and it's just amazing how these days everything's on a, well, maybe it's not an iPad, but I mean on a tablet. I mean scans in an emergency room situation. Scans are now available freely on an iPad, so that you're actually in the room with the iPad in your hand looking at the scans of that patient there. It's incredible how technology has infiltrated the medical world, and I know it's a TV series, but it's, you know, it's not Star Wars. It's amazing how technology has infiltrated the medical world for good purposes.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, some of the really cool things we've seen out of that, and this stuff is really in development, it's not in my notes, but you'll appreciate this, is the ability to actually do remote surgery by effective, or even improved surgery effectively, by wearing augmented reality headsets, so a kind of pair of glasses, and it can actually juxtapose the information about the patients as you're working on them. So we're seeing really cool advances that kind of, they don't improve, the process of an operation or what surgery is doing, but they actually augment it by giving extra information. As you said, the scans on the iPad being there automatically. Dentistry is a good example of this thing where several years ago you'd have to wait for an X-ray to come back. These days it's all digital, so it comes back almost immediately. And we've even heard of robots being able to do surgery in dental labs as well. So it is all changing. I don't know if it's necessarily for the better, but it's definitely more convenient, that's for sure.
Tell me about the world's biggest camera. Apparently, the world's biggest camera is a telescope.
It is. It's a huge telescope, actually. So the biggest camera is now a 3,200 megapixel camera. It's being built in Chile, and it's expected to launch next year. Basically, it's a special camera designed to monitor the night sky for 10 years in the southern hemisphere, basically to track it. The most interesting thing about this is we always talk about megapixels in phones, and so a lot of people like megapixels don't really mean anything. Megapixels mean a lot if you're storing a lot of information, and so a regular track of the night sky is perfect for that. But this year's Samsung, for instance, the S24 Ultra, had a 200 megapixel sensor in it that didn't always shoot at that size, but can be switched so that you can capture 200 megapixel images. To put it into perspective, that 3,200 megapixel camera in a telescope is roughly 16 Galaxy S24 Ultras or 48 iPhone 16 Pro Maxes, depending on how you look at it. You'd still need the telescope, but it's interesting to know that the whole megapixel thing is changing to the point where even telescopes are putting in ridiculously massive sensors, almost in tune with what we're doing in phones.
And last but not least, a toothbrush that has AI for about $500. What do you want a toothbrush that has AI for? I read the information you sent along, and it almost does everything but clean your teeth, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, look, I actually won't disagree with you. I've been reviewing it, and I actually think the AI is nonsense. I'll be completely honest and say I don't believe the AI is relevant. The most interesting part about it that I've found is it includes a bone conduction sensor, which basically, as you use your toothbrush, it can actually instruct you on how better to use the toothbrush. It basically speaks through a small speaker that reverberates through your mouth. The AI seems like nonsense, and I say that because there are times where it suggests things that it has no way of knowing. For instance, it suggested that I could possibly have bad breath. I don't believe I do, but there's no way a toothbrush with no sensor could actually learn that. It just seems sort of like an estimation. If anything, the most useful part is it's trying to give you a gauge on how better to brush your teeth. I don't know if that's worth $450. I'm pretty sure it's not. If anything, you know, spending $3 and having someone watch you or going to the dentist and having them instruct you might be the better go. It's a very judgy toothbrush, that much I'll say that. You get graded on how you brush. I have yet to hit 100. The most I've hit is 95, and I don't quite understand how. Maybe no one can be perfect. I don't know what that is. But yeah, it again, much like that gadget we're talking about before, where you buy for someone who has everything, you don't want to get them. A $450 smart toothbrush that connects to Wi-Fi and requires updates could be it. Personally, I would probably stick to spending $3 or $4 on a toothbrush, or $50 or $100 on a really decent electric toothbrush.
You and me both. Always good to talk to you, mate. Thank you for spending some of your Sunday morning with us. We'll catch up with you next week.
Happy to help, mate.
That's Lee Stark, and he's got a website. It is pickr.com.au. It has all sorts of interesting topics on there, technical topics. If you have a question, a techie question, you can send it to Lee directly, or you can send it to us, and we will ask Lee all about it next week.